Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
The map that the redistricting board must now approve is slightly less favorable to Republican candidates.
The state's redistricting board must use a new map for this year's elections. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, May 24th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Alaska parents and pediatricians face the nationwide shortage of baby formula.
They started to have moms that were calling somewhat desperately, afraid that they couldn't find formula for their babies.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Parents, did you know that 1 out of 4 Alaska high school students currently use e-cigarettes? E-cigarettes are easy to use and easy to hide. What teens breathe in and out from e-cigarettes is not safe. It contains cancer-causing chemicals, toxic metals, and nicotine. Nicotine can lead to addiction. It can harm brain development and hurt memory, learning, and attention span. Parents, talk to your teens about vaping. Visit livevapefree at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quitline.
The Alaska Supreme Court says the board that recently redrew boundaries for the state's legislative districts crafted state Senate districts in Anchorage in a way that favored Republican-leaning Eagle River. The state's high court agreed with an earlier Superior Court decision and wrote an opinion that says that the redistricting board, quote, engaged in unconstitutional political gerrymandering to increase the one group's voting power at the expense of others, end quote. That means the board has to adopt a different plan. Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks joins us now to talk about this latest development with redistricting. Hi, James.
Hi, Casey.
What actually happened today with this opinion?
The map that the redistricting board must now approve in place of this prior version that was thrown out is slightly less favorable to Republican candidates in Anchorage. And that opens the door for the possibility, at least opens the door a little wider for the possibility of a coalition to take control of the Senate after this year's elections. That's by no means guaranteed, but how I tend to think of it is, like, you know, baseball stadiums have different outfield walls based on where you go. This decision basically changes the shape of the outfield. So a hitter might have a better chance in this field where before the outfield wall might not have been as good for them.
Backing up prior to this decision, what was the original accusation of gerrymandering based on?
So, if you'll recall, the board approved a map of Senate districts, a map of House districts in November. And almost immediately, there were lawsuits about the process used to implement those maps. In November, when the board created its map of Senate districts, it came out of an executive session, a closed-door session, and almost immediately voted. And some people affected by that decision cried foul and said, hey, this was a secret process. You didn't do this in public. We have no idea how you came up with this, which appears to violate our constitutional rights.
And we should say that the Supreme Court, the Superior Court, said that the redistricting board as a body did this. But as it was happening, there were members of the board that were not in agreement with the other members of the board, right?
Right. And that's something that's important to understand, is that there's 5 members of this board, all appointed in 2020 by high-ranking government officials. So the 3 Republican officials appointed Republicans, the independent Speaker of the House and the Chief Justice each appointed people who are registered as undeclared. And the undeclared members, Nicole Borromeo and Melanie Behnke, really objected to the procedures and the result and said, hey, we expect this will result in a lawsuit, and it should result in a lawsuit, they said.
So tell me more about what that map that the board did pass, what the implications of that would have been if it had not been struck down. I mean, in terms of what those districts would have looked like politically.
Yeah, there's some nuance to this, but keep in mind that Anchorage has, over time, started voting more Democratic. And the map passed by the board, the one that was overturned today, would have resulted in two safe Democratic seats, two safe Republican seats, and the remainder being toss-up seats. That would have been four competitive districts, one that leans Republican, the remainder either toss-ups or leaning Democratic. The switch to a new option, a new map, means two solidly Democratic districts, one solidly Republican district, and five competitive districts, two of which lean Republican. So the result is one of the safe Republican seats now is a toss-up, or is at least competitive, potentially leaning Republican.
Gotcha. Well, it's a lot to keep on top of, and that was Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks helping us sift through it. James, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Casey.
The nationwide shortage of baby formula has left parents scrambling. In Alaska, some parents say formula was already hard to come by, especially in rural communities. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas spoke with one Homer parent struggling to find formula and an Anchorage pediatrician helping patients adapt.
In January, Lottie Connolly got a call from her babysitter. They were out of formula, and her 10-month-old baby girl, Sloane, was hungry. On her way home from work, Connolly stopped by her local grocery store in Homer. She was looking for the formula she knows Sloane likes most, Enfamil Inspire.
They did not have her kind in, so I bought same brand, just different, and she would not drink it.
So she got in her car and started driving to Soldotna, about an hour and a half north of Homer. She checked Fred Meyer, Walgreens, and Walmart, and had no luck.
So I panicked, obviously, because there was no food on the peninsula, and I had to drive all the way to Anchorage at this point, 10 o'clock at night, to see if I could find her formula. And when I got up there, I went to every grocery store, Target, everywhere I could, and bought a couple from each store.
She bought six containers on that first trip to Anchorage. That was enough to feed Sloane for about a month. Since then, she's been driving up to Anchorage twice a month in search of formula. Connolly isn't alone. In one Anchorage-based Facebook group, dozens of shoppers share photos of store shelves so others can see where baby formula is in stock. A formula exchange page created by a mother in Kodiak now has more than 15,000 members. Another page, called Human Milk for Human Babies Alaska, has nearly 2,000 members, a mix of donors and moms looking for milk. Parents across the state and country have been facing an infant formula shortage since February, when the country's largest formula manufacturer, Abbott, recalled products made at its plant in Michigan after four children became sick with bacterial infections.
Last week, maybe a week and a half ago, was really when the shortage seemed to hit the shelves in Alaska.
Dr. Monique Child says her patients are having to adapt. She's an outpatient pediatrician in Anchorage, and she's been giving away formula samples that manufacturers send to her office.
I started to have moms that were, I would say, calling somewhat desperately, afraid that they couldn't find formula for their babies.
She's worked with moms and babies to figure out what kinds of changes they can tolerate. One option for older babies is to try out a new type of formula.
But it's just like you or me. If we suddenly changed the bulk of our diet, our GI system takes a moment to get caught up to that difference.
Child says it's important to work closely with a pediatrician during a formula switch to ensure that it's happening safely. Younger babies don't have as many options.
I worry about those babies kind of in the middle. For whatever reason, we stopped breastfeeding at birth. We're now 6 months old. We're not close enough to a year old to really switch to cow's milk. We're pretty established on formula.
A woman might not breastfeed for a variety of reasons. Mothers of premature babies often rely on milk donations at the hospital. But Child says only about 10% of mothers produce enough milk to donate extra. When Connolly couldn't produce enough milk to feed Sloan shortly after her birth, a friend gave her extra breast milk. Connolly says there's been pressure, especially online, for other moms to do the same thing during the formula shortage.
People are just like, well, why don't you just donate breast milk? They don't have to do that. They really don't. It's really out of the kindness of their hearts that moms even do that.
Connolly tries to help out fellow moms when she can. In one local Facebook group, Homer residents ask if anyone in town needs something picked up in Anchorage. Next month, Connolly plans to drive to Anchorage and pick up formula for other parents. Between gas prices and hotel room costs, she knows not all families can afford the trip.
It's a big community thing. You know, if we're already going, we're going to try to help.
National efforts to alleviate the shortage are underway. Abbott's CEO says it could reopen its Michigan plant in the first week of June. Last week, President Biden invoked the Defense Production Act and required suppliers to prioritize getting baby formula ingredients to manufacturers. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski co-sponsored the Access to Baby Formula Act, and over the weekend, a shipment of formula arrived in the U.S. from Germany. Connolly recently ordered formula from a company based in Holland. In the meantime, she and other moms are keeping an eye out on Facebook and helping each other out when they can. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new program uses artificial intelligence to identify humpback whales.
They followed one from Alaska to Hawaii to Japan, back to Alaska. Made the loop of the North Pacific.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
On June 11th, Alaska will have the first round of a special election to fill the open seat in Congress. Every Alaskan voter will receive a ballot in the mail. In the June 11th primary, you can only vote for one person. The ranking happens later. Pick your favorite candidate, sign, and get a friend to sign as well. Then mail it back. And remember that June 11th is the Pick One primary. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
The only road between Seward and the community of Lowell Point will now reopen just before Memorial Day weekend. A landslide closed Lowell Point Road more than 2 weeks ago on May 7th. City and borough officials announced today that two-way traffic can resume on the road starting Friday at noon, a few days earlier than expected. Intermittent road closures are slated for next week. Chance Miller says it feels like someone's about to open the floodgates. Miller runs the campground and tourist business Miller's Landing in Lowell Point, and he says this holiday weekend is typically the kickoff to the small community's busy summer season.
It's when pretty much 100% of the time, 100% of our sites are sold out.
That said, he's not sure his business is fully ready for the surge. He's been in emergency mode since the landslide, putting his early season bookings on hold to instead ferry residents and trapped tourists back and forth, often for free. Now he'll have to pivot back to tourist mode. The road will be open 24 hours a day through the weekend, and that means visitors can just drive right up to his business.
Our phones are already, you know, firing off the hook. We have to tell them that the road's in fact open and they need to get a taxi or a rental car because we need to try to keep things status quo here.
He'll be back to ferrying between Seward and Lowell Point for a few days next week. The borough says Lowell Point Road will be closed again next Tuesday through Thursday between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. so crews can do blasting work. During that time, Miller's Landing and another company will offer free water taxis for residents and a pay-per-ride service for tourists. The beaches in Clam Gulch and Ninilchik won't open to clammers this summer after all. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game says it will keep the beaches closed for the eighth year in a row due to a continued grim outlook for the razor clams on the east side of Cook Inlet.
The growth was really poor on both beaches, and the survivability of the adult clams was really low.
Mike Booz is area manager for the Sport Fish Division of Fish and Game. His department has closed the beaches to clamming since 2015 due to low razor clam counts there. The population crashed about a decade ago and has been slow to bounce back. This year, armed with a new management plan, biologists were hopeful there might finally be enough clams to get a fishery going. and they held out hope when they began surveying the beaches in April, looking for signs that the population was rebounding and clams were surviving into adulthood. But this May, when they looked at the far ends of the beaches, they were disappointed.
And with both of those surveys, the abundance really dropped more than what we were expecting it to. So it didn't make it to 50% of the historical average abundance.
That was the threshold set in the management plan for a reopening. Booz says the department will be back out on the beach next March and April to conduct new surveys. But for now, clammers will have to stick to the west side of the inlet where the population is healthier. The status of Mount Edgecumbe volcano near Sitka has changed from dormant to historically active. The Alaska Volcano Observatory updated Edgecumbe's status on May 9th, but it doesn't mean that the crater is any closer to an eruption. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
A lot of people in Sitka have become used to calling Mount Edgecumbe dormant, but that term really isn't used by geologists.
It's a word that isn't very well defined in volcanology. It doesn't have a lot of specific meaning to us, and instead we tend to talk about volcanoes with how recent or long ago it's been since they were active or since they had an eruption.
Cheryl Cameron is a geologist with the Alaska Volcano Observatory in Fairbanks. Mount Edgecumbe was formerly known as a Holocene volcano, since the geologic evidence of its last major eruption dates from the Holocene era, around 12,000 years ago. The AVO now classifies Mount Edgecumbe as historically active.
Volcanoes can get put into this category through having had a recent eruption or a suspected recent eruption, or they've got a period of deformation or seismic activity or fumarolic activity that we think reflects accumulation of magma in the crust below the volcano.
A recent eruption usually means within the last 300 years, but the AVO recognizes that native oral histories indicate an eruption history that goes a few hundred years beyond that. Nevertheless, being classified as historically active doesn't mean that Mount Edgecumbe is about to erupt. Rather, it's going to get more attention now from the Alaska Volcano Observatory. Cameron says a geophysical team is on the ground in Sitka to do a temporary seismic installation on Kruzoff Island. Not that the AVO wasn't paying attention before, but there are over 50 historically active volcanoes in Alaska. Cameron actually grew up in Sitka, and the seismic swarm in April that got this ball rolling may have gone unnoticed, but it didn't.
Because my brother sent me the earthquake location, and he said, Cheryl, what's up with this? And I said, well, gosh, let me ask the seismologist. And I asked the seismologist, and the seismologist said, you know, there's a swarm. And of course, we still needed to do more work and further analysis to determine if the earthquakes were, you know, some sort of rather mundane tectonic processes or if they're related to the volcano.
Cameron says that the Alaska Volcano Observatory is making plans for a permanent seismic installation on Mount Edgecumbe and that any volcanic activity would likely come with plenty of advance warning. We don't want people losing sleep over it, she said. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547. NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. NEA Alaska members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org and help NEA Alaska reach, teach, and inspire all Alaska students. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
A new whale identification program uses artificial intelligence to identify humpbacks by their flukes. Through photographs shared by whale watchers, the citizen science program Happy Whale has recorded thousands of whales that travel to and from Alaska. KFSK's Angela Denning reports.
It's a special moment watching a gigantic humpback going for a deep dive. The whale's back arches, the tail swings up, disappearing below the surface, like the pointed toes of an Olympic diver. The tail fins, or flukes, are unique to each whale. The black and white pattern on the underside are precise identifiers.
Like facial recognition, we can tell who it is.
Ted Cheeseman is an expedition scientist who has studied whales all over the world, including in Antarctica. He created the program Happy Whale as a way to track humpbacks, a species that's known to travel thousands of miles. It's helping to answer a lot of questions about their individual behavior.
You know, who does the whale hang out with? Does the whale have a calf? You know, what is the larger story here? Such that we can, you know, build family relationships and so on, tell more of the story of the individual. And to me, that's a huge part of this.
The difference between this photo ID program and others in the past is the manpower needed. Happy Whale uses an automated computer program to ID the photos instead of people doing it by hand. Just one full-time and two part-time employees run the database and confirm the results. The program started in 2015, but took years to test and fine-tune. Now, whale watchers can share their fluke photos and locations to the online database, which has identified 68,000 humpbacks worldwide. The program started with 18,000 whale photos that had been previously ID'd by hand. Cheeseman says this is way more efficient.
Somebody gives me a data set of 1,000 photos. It used to be that that would be an hour per photo. The actual matching time is now insignificant. Someone gives me 1,000 photos and I can tell them the next day, 700 of them are these known whales and these 300, those are probably new. You know, it's pretty cool.
The program has documented about 30,000 humpbacks in the North Pacific, which Cheeseman expects is about 70% of the population. Participants are rewarded for their work. They usually get an initial response within a few days to a week and get notices when their whale is spotted again. Dennis Rogers is a longtime whale-watching guide in Petersburg and has uploaded over 5,500 photos to the program.
It's very interesting just to see their migrations. Some of these whales go to Hawaii for the winter and they're resighted there, which we get a notification when that resighting happens. Some of our whales go to Mexico. It's real interesting. Some of our whales go to Mexico one year and Hawaii the next year.
Rogers encourages his clients to send in their photos as well. He says other tracking systems, including satellite tags, can fall off whales within days.
This is purely uninvasive and gives a great amount of information over time. Some of our whales we've been tracking for close to 40 years.
The program has found some unusual migrations in Alaska's individual whales.
They followed one from Alaska to Hawaii to Japan, back to Alaska, made the loop of the North Pacific.
That's Scott Roberge, who is on the board for Petersburg's Marine Mammal Center. He also contributes photographs and enjoys getting the feedback.
It's incredible to get that information and to get the email that says, the whale that you took a picture of last summer was just found in Hawaii and it just had a baby.
Cheeseman believes that over 95% of humpbacks in Southeast Alaska are in the database already. But that's just the start of Happy Whale, as the program is expanding. Cheeseman hopes to automate dorsal fin recognition within the year, which would allow them to identify and track orcas and other species a lot faster. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Haines Formline artist James Hart will apprentice with several master Tlingit and Haida artists beginning this summer. After about 4 years developing Northwest Coast formline design and painting techniques, the young artist says he's excited to take his skills to the next level in glass and carving. KHNS's Corinne Smith reports.
James Hart sits in his studio overlooking Main Street in Haines, bathed in afternoon spring sunlight and a sweeping view of Mount Rapinski. Northwest Coast formline paintings and paddles hang on the walls, and a splitboard leans against one wall, all painted by his brother, cousin, and Hart himself.
My name is James Grucich Hart, and I'm an artist.
He puts the finishing touches on a new formline painting, outlining a bold black design highlighted by red forms and a yellow background. He began focusing on Northwest Coast formline art just a few years ago.
It's been a very long road from the start, which was a paddle making class with Wayne Price here in Haines at the wood shop at the school. And from there, was able to apprentice with him on 2 40-foot dugouts and kind of wasn't sure if that was the direction that I wanted to keep going, but it just kept calling me back.
From there, he began taking formline design classes with Tsimshian artist David Robert Boxley of Metlakatla. Then the COVID pandemic hit.
I spent a lot of time just working on designs. My design work has gotten a lot better, and I felt like I was in a place where I'm comfortable designing, and now I want to start learning how to carve these designs.
Up next is something totally new for Hart, working in glass. He was selected to attend a workshop at the Pilchuck Glass School in Washington State, working with renowned Tlingit glass artist Preston Singletary and master carver Joe David.
We're going to be blowing glass and then sandblasting our designs onto these different pieces, so super excited.
Then Hart will apprentice with revered master Haida artist Robert Davidson.
If you're unfamiliar with Robert Davidson, he's your favorite Northwest Coast artist, favorite artist.
Davidson is a pivotal figure in the Northwest Coast art renaissance starting in 1969 and is an internationally known carver of totem poles and masks, printmaker, painter, and jeweler. Hart approached Davidson last winter and they discussed his work and agreed Hart would apprentice with him at his British Columbia studio for the next few years.
I'll be honest, I like got done, I like jumped around and fist pumped a few times and then probably cried a little bit too. So it's like all the emotions wrapped up in one. It's like an extremely difficult art form to kind of learn and start getting good at and to kind of quietly be working by myself up to the point where I'm getting an opportunity to work with one of the best. It's like, I don't know, I feel extremely fortunate.
Hart tears up a bit and grabs a paintbrush again.
He does a lot for Haida Gwaii and Haida people. He's also a little bit Tlingit, so that's also fun to put in. But he holds his culture extremely highly, and it seems like that's been his driving force, is the culture. And to be able to kind of learn from somebody and learn how to create a career that's culturally based is really what I'm looking for.
Community members may know Hart from a number of leadership roles in Haines. He's the president of the Chilkoot Indian Association and involved in tribal and regional public affairs. He's also coach Hart to young basketball players at Haines High or Little League players during the summer. Hart says he plans to travel back and forth between Haines and BC and continue participating in those areas, particularly mentoring and sharing traditional arts with youth. In Haines, I'm Corinne Smith.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Angela Denny in Petersburg, and Corinne Smith in Haines. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.